I see.
Before we get started.
Okay.
Hi, Kim. This is Mary Trehune from Boston.
Hey, Mary. How's it going?
Going well, thanks.
Good.
Hi, Kim. It's Marcia, Vancouver Island.
Hey, Marcia. How's it going?
Gorgeous up here.
Is it? Yeah, it's beautiful where I am as well. Beautiful day today.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Who's that?
Hi, I'm Tina from New Jersey.
Oh, hi, Tina.
I'm one of Luke's former students.
Oh, great. Nice to have you on.
Thank you. Nice to be on. Yeah. Thank you for keeping me on the email list.
Oh, of course. So, anybody else want to say hi? Dr. Luke, are you there yet?
I'm just arriving.
Okay, great.
Hi, Luke.
Hello.
Hi, Dr. Luke.
How are you doing, everybody?
Very well.
The gorgeous New Mexico, Santa Fe, and that Vancouver stuff there.
Yeah. I think the whole West Coast has got some nice weather right now. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so anybody else want to say hi before we get started, and then I'll kind of go through the format of tonight's interview?
Sure, I'll say hi. This is Edith in Pennsylvania.
Hi, Edith. How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
Good, good. So we're going to conduct a formal interview for the first 45 minutes, and I'm going to mute everybody out during that period of time. And then after about 45 minutes or so, I'll unmute the phone, and then we'll open it up to the general audience, and people who have been waiting to have their questions answered can go ahead and ask at that time. So I'm going to go ahead, and nobody has to worry about muting their phones out. I'm going to take care of muting people and then unmuting them. Okay, so hold on one second while I do that. Luke, can you still hear me?
I still hear you.
Okay, fantastic. So first of all, Luke, thank you so much for joining us again on one of these teleconference calls. I've been getting incredible feedback on the usefulness of the information you've been sharing with people. So thank you so much. I know you're extremely busy, and it's very much appreciated by everybody. It really is my great honor to introduce everybody to, if you haven't heard Dr. Luke DeShepherd speak before, he's really very a very gifted speaker. And not only that, he is an encyclopedia of homeopathy. I honestly can tell you that I don't know anybody who knows the organon or chronic diseases or the fundamental principles of classical homeopathy better than Luke does. I mean, he literally can, you can mention any aphorism in the organon, and he could not only wax poetic about the meaning of that aphorism, but probably has memorized a good portion of it. So this is somebody who's a real scholar, but on top of that, he has the ability to, because of his 29 years of clinical experience, to make the information in books like The Organon or Chronic Diseases or the, you know, Kent's lectures on homeopathic philosophy, to make these works have practical value. In other words, he takes it apart and he can present this information in such a way that you can take it home and immediately apply it to your practice of homeopathy or your studies and your understanding of the depth of the art and science of this amazing healing system. So Luke is the author of 14 books. He teaches regularly all over North America and in Europe as well. He is going to be doing a seminar coming up May 15th and 16th. The title of that seminar is Finding the Similimum Through Delusions and Dreams, and that's going to be at Victoria University in Toronto, Canada. If anybody wants more information about that, they can contact us toll-free at 888-722-5423. That's 888-722-5423, and that's for May 15th and 16th in Toronto, Canada. And again, the title of that seminar is Finding the Similimum Through Delusions and Dreams. I also wanted to mention that Dr. Luke is the author of the very well-known Hahnemann Revisited, which is a textbook used in many different schools around the world as a primer for homeopathy. And I also wanted to just quickly mention that he's coming out with another book, and I believe, Luke, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it's going to be coming out sometime in June or thereabouts. And I think this book is going to play a central role in homeopathy because there's really no book quite like it. And it addresses one of the most important issues in homeopathic practice, which is the follow-up, the second prescription. And this is a book that's born from Luke's tremendous scholarly research efforts. And I think it's, like I said, it's going to be a unique work in the history of homeopathy. The name of that book, which will be coming out this summer, is Achieving and Maintaining the Similimum. So look out for that in the early to midsummer. It's going to be really a very special book. So, Luke, thank you so much for joining us. It's greatly appreciated, and I'll let you say hello to everybody on the call.
Hello, my dear friends. I'm really pleased to hear that some of my old students are there. You know, Tina in New Jersey there, and Edith, that's my new student, or my present student, and Mary Terhune, and whoever that I have heard. It's just a pleasure for me just to do it again. It's kind of nice. It's getting a little windy now, just to sit nicely here in my office and be ready after. I hope, you know, I have some time left over school, because I really enjoy getting the questions from you, what you really want to hear. And it doesn't have to be necessarily about the topic of tonight. Obviously, I like to hear anything, and hopefully I can give you an answer.
Thank you, Luke. And I know everybody really appreciates you taking the time out to do these calls. The discussion, the topic of tonight's call is liver remedies. And so I thought I'd start by asking you, I know there's many different liver remedies. Which ones do you choose? I mean, how do you choose these? And maybe you could give us some of the indications for choosing these different liver remedies.
Well, actually, you know, indeed we have many liver remedies, usually in homeopathy, and I only have to mention remedies such as Nux Vomica, Phosphorus, Sulfur, Lachesis, and I'm not going to talk about any of the above. In other words, I chose some remedies like Lycopodium, Magnesium Muriaticum, and Chelidonium. And why did I choose those three, actually? I chose those because I think I wanted to show you to you remedies or discuss remedies about liver remedies now that remain often hidden to us. And, you know, you might just say, well, Lycopodium does not seem to be belong to this particular class of remaining hidden to us when the patient comes on a visit to us. But you would be surprised that the chameleon that the Lycopodium can be can even fool the most experienced homeopath sometimes. And therefore, you know, I wanted to definitely discuss this particular character a little bit more than the other ones. The other two, Chelidonium and Magnesium Muriaticum, often remain hidden because they're much lesser known. Not that they are actually small remedies, not necessarily, certainly not to the caliber of Lycopodium or Lachesis or anything like this, but certainly they are extremely important remedies with great many indications. And it's unfortunate that they are actually very little known and very underused without any doubt, as we will see where we, Chelidonium, for instance, is very often underprescribed and should be prescribed where Lycopodium is prescribed, as we will see a little bit later. And Magnesium Muriaticum often should be prescribed where Napmur is prescribed. So this is a very important thing for us to look a little bit closer at these three remedies and see how we can distinguish these particular remedies.
Luke, you know, obviously Lycopodium is a polycrest remedy, and the other two, Chelidonium and Magnesium Muriaticum, as you said, they're not small remedies, but they're certainly smaller than the polycrest. Do you have a way of determining when you should be thinking about a polycrest versus one of the smaller remedies? Is there something that you, some way that you consider this?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I think it's a very pertinent one nowadays, you know, because we see many, many teachers really putting the accent on using small remedies, and I never hear, you know, polycrest almost are sneered at, unfortunately, as well in seminars as in schools. We just need to kind of go back to the definition that Hahnemann gave us, you know, in his Materia Medica Pura, where he said that, well, wait a minute, polycrest are really medicines which corresponds in similarity with the symptoms of the most common and most frequent of human diseases, and therefore, he says, very often have a great homeopathic employment. So as you see, when we talk about polycrest, it comes from the Greek word polycrestia. It means great usefulness, a great many uses that we have. Therefore, we should certainly not draw our nose up for using these remedies or even presenting cases that really responded well to this particular remedy. I can really remember cases, the most severe pathology, which actually were resolved very nicely with remedies such as Lachesis and Lycopodium. And, you know, I am very grateful to have them. So that's what we would call a polycrest. Now, the question can be asked, when should we use them a small remedy? You know, that's kind of a question that falls automatically the previous one. I must say too many teachers really at this point are teaching in homeopathic seminars these small remedies. Why do I say it? Because when they keep on teaching such things, you get the impression that's all you need, and that's really what you mainly should look out for. And this goes against all logic, as we have heard from Hahnemann's definition of a polycrest. Because what is a small remedy? It's basically a remedy that fits a specific condition or a specific problem. And therefore, it has a limited field of action and has characteristic symptoms that fit with a certain presenting problem. When to use it is, of course, the real question. You must understand that most patients, when they come to us, they have something wrong with their general condition, although, of course, most of them present with a chief complaint, obviously. But more than a chief complaint, as you understand, when we do an inquiry, we talk a lot more about it than just a chief complaint. And a true homeopath obviously takes all characteristic symptoms in account on the mental, emotional, and physical plane. So for this reason alone, I would say clearly the rule number one is that 99% of your cases, and I'm not exaggerating, 99% of your cases need to be started with a polycrest. Those small remedy prescribers who have the, who always are looking for it, and I don't know why, because, there's only a couple of zebras in New York, too. There's a lot more horses there than zebras. But anyway, those that look always for that small remedy run the risk to sin against what Hahnemann warned us in a footnote to Aphorism 7, which all of you should really know very well, in which he says that a single symptom is no more the whole disease than a single food a whole man. That sounds very logical. And he said this method is all the more objectionable because it treats a particular symptom with an opposite remedy with the result that it returns worse than before after a short alleviation or palliation. As you can see, the successful, and I put that in parentheses, the successful small prescriber often runs the risk of palliating where a cure is possible. That is the last thing that we want to do. And after a short euphoria of the patient and homeopath, a more complex disease is the net result. Now, that doesn't mean, by the way, to finish this particular question, that we never need a small remedy, and even starting with a small remedy. Certainly, if we have been treating the patient successfully for a certain amount of time, months, sometimes even years, and there's still existing a special problem, and usually with a special problem, I often refer to that as a local physical problem, maybe, then we might actually know, and we can, really choose a small remedy that basically will fit this particular local problem. But not, by the way, before you try another trick that Hahnemann taught us. In other words, before you are going to use a small remedy that might fit that last remaining local problem, and I give you an example, for instance, a goiter or any other physical expression, but before you try to do that, you should try another trick first. In other words, let's just give an example, a goiter in a hyperthyroid, and the patient responds very well to Lachesis, which is often, by the way, a remedy indicated in certain cases of hyperthyroid, then even if the patient in every aspect improves, mentally, emotionally, but for instance, the bug eye stays, their eyes, the popping eyes, and maybe the goiter even stays too, then rather than first looking for a small remedy that will fit this particularly last bastion, I would say, to overcome, you should actually, at this point, use the chronic remedy that you were using, Lachesis in this case, as I give an example, and actually what you should do is increase the amount of the doses. In other words, when we are giving, let's just either 50 dicin or 6 dicin LM potency, then you actually will increase the doses from 1 to 2, 3 teaspoons a day, rather than a teaspoon, at that point. And very often, Hahnemann achieved a miracle, and I have been able to do the same in the practice, by the way, only learning from him, that now the case goes forward again and actually removes the last particularly obstacle to the cure, rather than actually choosing a small remedy. So even in those cases, you will actually still use your polycrest. And you should really then, because the vital force at this point, you must understand, who has been working with that particular remedy, Lachesis in this example I took again, who has been working with this remedy and now therefore knows this remedy, and the vital force who is already more supported because you have had excellent results with Lachesis so far, it cannot take at this point a lot more doses, greater doses, and it can react in a secondary curing reaction. Obviously, because it is already much stronger at this point. So for us, it's extremely important. I mean, I give you another example, which is very often, by the way, and sometimes easy for us to make a mistake as homeopaths. Let's just say somebody comes to you with a prostate suffering, with prostatitis, and we have now used first remedies like Tuya, Midorianum, mean great remedies, great Policrest, and we see now that the patient has enormously improved on the mental emotional plane, but the prostate remains enlarged. And if the patient now fits a small remedy, and very often one of those that I would think first to use would be Clematis, by the way, who has involuntary dribbling and a sensation the bladder is never empty, that would be actually an indication to use a small remedy at that point. You know, at that point, as you can see, because we already have definitely supported the vital force. I have another example, for instance, a little boy, let's say a sulfur boy, in a case of enuresis nocturna, bedwetting. Now, in spite, and I have had those cases, in spite of a great general improvement, the bedwetting remains. Now, my friend Kunzli always said, homeopathic treatment is only successful when even when the chief complaint and even that last physical problem improves. We are not just pleased because, you know, the boy is not happy doing pee-pee in his bath. That wouldn't be very much of an improvement. We want definitely resolve the bedwetting too. If that bedwetting, for instance, at that point, after the patient, after this boy has improved tremendously on sulfur, like a Bojan calcarb, whatever, and the bedwetting problems now corresponds to a smaller remedy like creosotum, because, you know, there is involuntary urination at night in his first sleeps, in which it's difficult to waken up the child, then obviously we can have an indication for the small remedy. But as you can see, though, very few indications to start with a small remedy, contrary to what the small remedy gurus might want you to believe. There's only a couple of cases where you do start with a small remedy to finish this. I keep on finishing this, but there's something else that comes to my mind. One case where we have a very rare and characteristic symptom belonging to such remedy, let's just say delusion. You know, very often there's very specific and very important symptoms that we see in the patient are delusions, fixed ideas that really govern the actions and the thoughts of the patient. If we see such a delusion, a characteristic symptom, for instance, we have a patient, let's give an example, maybe he has an acute attack of hay fever, and in which the patient has now the fixed idea that something is moving in his abdomen. In other words, that she is pregnant. Delusion to the state of the body, as you can see. This would indicate, by the way, sabbadia as an acute remedy. Certainly it would be indicated. We would start the treatment because we have these very characteristic symptoms now which are definitely belonging to sabbadia, and we have the need for an acute intercurrent. Afterwards, certainly a good homeopath would look for a complementary, deeper working Policrest to avoid recurrence of such attacks without any doubt. As you can see, that is one case where you would start with a small remedy. Very few cases. Another case might be because the person is now in a very severe pain. Let's just give an example. For instance, very severe pain that drains the vital force of the patient. Maybe a lower back pain. Maybe a sciatica. Let's just say a sciatica. And the sciatica seems to be responding to worse lying on the affected side, worse laughing, worse sneezing, worse laying on the left side. It might make you think of tellurium. You know, and it might well be that tellurium would be indicated at this point because this way we'll support the energy of the patient by resolving the pain of that patient with tellurium, and then we would continue with probably a more of a Policrest. And even in this case, by the way, out from experience, I have seen that even in such severe cases when there is a lot of pain, that the indicated chronic remedy, the chronic Policrest, would still do away with the pain, sometimes even better than this, what I would call an acute intercurrent. But this is debatable, of course, and certainly it might be the case. And only a third indication of a small remedy, where you would start with a small remedy, would probably be where the small remedy is the constitutional remedy. In other words, no symptoms are apparent of another Policrest. Well, the patient, for instance, suffers from a severe arthritis, maybe similar to a small remedy like Spigelia, you know, because the patient complaints about needle-like stitches and easy numbness of extremities, painful stiffness. Again, there's two at that point, because it is the constitutional or layer remedy, as I would call it. This would be the case that you would start it. But all in all, as you can see, it is very rarely the case. 99% polycrest, please. And certainly don't make the mistake that if you see symptoms of natrium uriaticum and you see symptoms of arsenicum, that you say, well, great, that must be natrium arsenosicum and natrium arsenicum. You know, even Kent made that mistake, and he certainly was lambasted for it. So this is certainly not one area where we would imitate this great master. We don't want to do that. So that's probably a little bit extensive, I guess.
No, that was actually an excellent. I think it's a controversial answer, Luke, but I 100% agree with you. I know that when I was in my early years of practice, and I was actually apprenticing with a very good homeopath, and I would, you know, repertorize the cases, and I would come up with some of these smaller remedies, and I would want to give them because, you know, it would cover a part of the case. And he would always say, no, look further, look for the deeper polycrest remedies. And when he would let me try these smaller remedies, almost always they would not work. And when we would go back to the polycrest, they would work. So I've had this personal experience myself, and I know it's true. And I know that even a lot of the teachers out there who are exploring a lot of the newer concepts and smaller remedies are still in their actual practices mostly giving polycrest remedies. So I think this really bears out exactly what you're saying. I mean, you gave it a very eloquent answer for that question, but I think it really is the truth of most people's experiences in homeopathy. So I really do appreciate very much that answer. Maybe we could talk a little bit. I knew you had mentioned lycopodium, and it makes me think of there's that book by Farouk Master where he's got a it's called Mr. Lycopodium, and he's got a photograph on the front of it of Billy Crystal, and, you know, exposing Billy Crystal is the archetypal person who typifies lycopodium. So I thought I would ask you, who is Mr. Lycopodium?
Well, I sure like Billy Crystal. That doesn't mean I don't like Mr. Lycopodium always. No, and I probably have less of a problem with lycopodium than a lot of my phosphorus ladies have in general. So, yeah, if I would look at Mr. Lycopodium, I like to always describe Mr. Lycopodium with one word. He is a balloon. He is a balloon. You know, if you think about a balloon looks always great and magnificent, isn't it? But on the inside, there is nothing in but air. Nothing but air. No strength. If the balloon becomes warm, he swells more. If he becomes cold, he shrinks. Now, the bigger the balloon becomes, the closer he reaches the point of bursting. And if the balloon bursts, guess what happens? He bursts with a bang, and it causes startling. And then the bursting balloon, and we all have done those things, haven't we, flies away in all directions, and afterwards it's difficult to find it back because there is nothing left. Well, I tell you one thing, all these characteristics are found in the lycopodium constitution. Now, think about it. He is a boaster. He blows himself up. There is the balloon coming up. Great love for power, but inside of him there is this great lack of confidence. This great lack of character, we even call it, with great cowardice. You know, he has a great fear for undertaking new things. You know, we call it also fear of being unable to reach his destination. As you can see, lycopodium has that inside, and he's a chameleon, by the way, because he is extremely good at hiding this. When he comes to you in a consultation, he does not give you that impression of lack of confidence. Maybe lack of character, but not lack of confidence. Certainly he tries to overpower you because he has that great fear of being detected. So you see what a lycopodium does. To keep up this magnificent balloon view, he is buying expensive cars, clothes, jewels, to make an impression on everybody around him. Certainly when we hear that kind of thing, we have to make a differential diagnosis with other characters and hypersexual characters, I would say, like Major Einem, and I think even more about fluoric acid. You know, the fluoric acid who probably would be the picture of a modern pimp and just is gently and nice to everybody on the street except at home where he wants to chase his women, his wife and his children away, and even his servants. So, but certainly like a podium, wants to also make an impression on his environment. And he, you know, we read, for instance, it's a 2 for presumptuous. He's a presumptuous guy. You know, he wants to make sure that everybody saw him, that everybody saw how beautiful he is. He behaves superior, haughty, And, of course, he always demands and takes attention from their loved ones, you know, without giving back. That's the problem. He wants all the attention, but he gives very little back. And we're talking about specifically his family members or the ones who love him. There is also always, and this is what he tries to hide, that great fear for performance, especially sexual performance. Certainly is one of those greatest remedies for sexual performance, erection disturbances. And, of course, there is this great fear for responsibility. That, of course, everybody knows. Because getting closer to somebody would certainly expose his true character, that little air in that balloon, his timidity and his lack of self-confidence, which at first is certainly not at all clear when you see him. We find also Leocapote, for instance, under the rubric aversion to be approached. When we look at that aversion, and translate that.
Luke, I'm sorry, you cut off for a second. Do you want to just repeat what you just said? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You cut out for 1 second.
Okay. We find the capodium under the rubric aversion to be approached. So when we try to analyze aversion to be approached, it can be translated as the difficulty that Lycopodium has when he tries to have an intimate relationship. So he doesn't like to be approached, first of all, because he's afraid somebody's going to find out who he really is. So he either makes a lot of noise to impress the others. You know, remember the balloon that burst? That's just him, you know, making a lot of noise, so to startle the other people and overpower them. Or he disappears, never to be heard or seen again, to the consternation of the other party, of those little phosphorus ladies who fell on their feet for this Mr. Lycopodium. And that really refers to that balloon that flies away, never to be seen again. So as you can see, for Lycopodium, love and sex are two different things, two entirely. For him, that's not one and one is two. That's one and one is three for him. He is afraid of intimate relationships, so basically, therefore, when he wants sex, he goes to prostitutes and has very superficial relationships, what I would call meaningful overnight relationships. The typical, another one who likes fluoric acid too, but like a poison certainly, that's his motto. So, as you can see, there's no doubt that the Lycopodium man is very responsible for quite some initiation events in women, especially the little phosphorus women, and this should be definitely a red flag for you ladies who are listening. But, you know, you must also understand that he is a great charmer, he is an intellectual, he is great at words, and he loves to be surrounded by women rather than men. So, but if you have sex with him, it's sex without love for a Lycopodium person. That should be a warning and a red flag.
Luke, I have a two-part question. If you have a case where you don't have the description of Lycopodium as you just made it, which was, by the way, was a very elegant description of the personality of Lycopodium. If you have a case where you don't have that picture of the personality, but you have the indications of Lycopodium for, let's say, liver symptomology, can you still give Lycopodium? And what would be the indications of the liver symptoms for Lycopodium?
Well, that's a very good question. So to answer that first part of it, because, as I said, a liver person, a Lycopodium person, that is very good at masquerading, and you know, really at masking his whole personality. So it might well be that, and he will come, by the way, with physical problems. This is not a person, by the way, who will come to you and open his heart and give you anything about his personal life, not even his sex life, unless it's broken. Then he definitely will come to you for impotence and erection disturbances. So, you know, often it takes all the qualities of a good homeopath to really get more to know about it, although there's no doubt about it that Lycopodium, because it's a very strong psychotic remedy, can be very secretive and will hide definitely most of his psychic life to the homeopath. But he will come, as you say, no doubt about it, with many liver problems. And this is interesting for us, too, what kind of liver problems that he will come. And therefore, often we will discover the other way around, through the physical expression, we'll discover that mental-emotional picture behind it. If you haven't heard it from his wife, with time, there's no doubt about it, that like a podium, feeling more comfortable, will open more, and probably sometimes he'll give himself away. And by the way, certainly one thing he will give himself away right away is through his dreams, what I would call reductive dreams. Reductive dreams, because they'll actually will tell him in his dreams because he has such a one-sided picture of himself. That one-sided picture is a bloated, boasted picture, as you already know, an inflated picture. Therefore, we know that the dreams will just take the opposite picture, the compensation rule here, and like a poem, to his horror, has all these dreams of failing exams, dreams of not reaching his destination, business that goes wrong, and so on and so on. So here, you know, he probably tell you about his dreams, and you actually will get to know the lycopodium before he even suspects that you know his real makeup, emotionally. So, but no, that's the first part of the question that you asked me. The second part, certainly, he will come with specific liver gallbladder ailments, and for sure, as we all know, often these ailments, the complaints, the symptoms characteristically in lycopodium person go from right to left, as we always know. Certainly everybody knows the aggravation in the afternoon from 4 to 8 p.m. But we should always remember that a lycopodium person gets easily headaches if he does not have lunch on time. That's not the only one who has that, as you might know. Phosphorus and sulfur do have that too. But the lunchtime, skipping lunch for a lycopodium person is a bad thing to do because, no doubt about it, by 4 or 5 o'clock, he'll actually will show up with headaches, and that's one of the things that he might say to you, certainly, which makes you think immediately of lycopodium. Also, the right hypochondrium is swollen with pain extending to the back. That's one of the things, and therefore, because of that swelling, he cannot lie on the right side. It's too sensitive for him, so he sleeps mainly on the left side, not on the right side, when he has liver problems. He never wants cold drinks, by the way, and that makes a difference to diagnose with phosphorus immediately, which is important for us to know. Neither do they like cold foods. No, they always want warm foods. That's a classical great liver, positive liver symptom of lycopodium. Interesting enough, and this is something that is puzzling, often we see two diagonally opposite pictures of the same remedy, and lycopodium has this too. Lycopodium has easy satiety in his appetite, and on the other hand, they have ravenous appetite, where eating increases the hunger. So you see we have two rather opposite pictures here, or rubrics, and it really depends on the pathology what picture we actually will see. For instance, if it's truly liver gallbladder disturbances, then their appetite will be immediately stilled, because anything they eat, so in other words, we have easy satiety, because the moment they eat still a little, everything turns to gas. I mean, they form gas like the best gas machine. So the stomach gets totally distended, and even just a mouthful, amazingly enough, just a mouthful of food fills him to the throat. I mean, he will say to you, my gas comes up to my throat, this much. So obviously, if they eat a little lunch, automatically it gives them a distended feeling, bloating, and certainly in the abdomen too, around 4 o'clock even more, distension so that they now cannot even wear any tight clothing or a belt. They will certainly lose their belt. So that's really that, easy satiety if there is pathology in the gallbladder liver area, when there really is pathology in those particular organs. And on the other hand, by the way, if you rather have a mental emotional problem and have cases of anorexia with bulimia, the interesting case here is that lycopodium can be indicated for such cases when they have no appetite, but as soon as they taste something, just, they think, let me just eat a little orange that I see there. That's not going to bring me out of tilt here. Well, the moment they just taste it, they can't stop eating, and they overeat. So this is, of course, often followed by bulimia. So this is very important for us to remember this, that we have those two opposite characteristic symptoms, both belong to lycopodium. Certainly, people, if they have chronic problems, lycopodium might be definitely indicated in chronic hepatitis. I would say to you that whenever you have chronic problems, chronic liver problems, be it hepatitis, be it liver cancer, with spreading of cancer to the liver, that lycopodium and chelidonium, which we'll talk a little bit later about it, are certainly the two mostly indicated remedies that certainly will bring a lot of patients in the right directions. So rather than acute hepatitis, it's more indicated in chronic hepatitis. with that characteristic pain in the right hypochondria extending to the back, of course. So that means also he's indicated in ascites, you know, the ascites where we have retention of water in the abdomen and great prostration, like I've seen in many, many cases, by the way, of advanced liver cirrhosis due to alcoholism. Again, here I would say for you, keep lipopodium in your mind at number one position if it really fits. Cirrhosis due to alcoholism, advanced cirrhosis with ascites. And I remember such a case clearly that I saw probably about 8-9 years ago, and who was then on the liver, who was then on the liver transplant list. And I want to say happily, because he had a complete portal thrombosis, by the way. The whole portal venous system was thrombosed, and which was impossible to, you know, turn to normal according to the Mayo Clinic. He was a patient in the Mayo Clinic. Yet it only took me 1 year with remedies like Lachesis and lipopodium, by the way, no fancy stuff here, just lipopodium, Lachesis, when indicated, to actually reverse the situation to the point where in the Mayo Clinic they had never seen anything alike and thought they had the wrong patient. And I'm happy to say that even right now, in 2004, he is still alive and making a nuisance out of himself to his wife, but he's still grateful that I saved him anyway. So he's still off that list, and that's now probably 8 to 9 years later. So it's a great, great indication for those particular cases. And the last indication I would say, a great one, is gallstone colics. We have many remedies for gallstone colics, and certainly lipopodium might not be the first one that comes to your mind. Maybe something like China might come to your mind. But certainly it does give recurrent bilious attacks with vomiting of bile. So we should keep it in mind. And if we actually give lipopodium, when it's indicated, of course, just on more than this gallstone colics, the bile secretion becomes totally normal, and they get, the gallstones actually dissolve completely. So this is one of those miracles of homeopathy where we don't need to yank out that gallbladder in order to relieve the patient from those gallstones.
Thank you for that answer, Luke. Earlier on, you had mentioned the three remedies that you wanted to focus on tonight, which was lipopodium, magnesium muriatica, and chelidonium. Why did you choose chelidonium?
Yeah, chelidonium, I kind of referred to it already a little bit, is here that because chelidonium is very often, should very often be prescribed where we actually take lipopodium. As you will see, chelidonium is actually called the twin brother of lipopodium because they have very many things in common. Certainly it's one of our greatest remedies, and we should always keep it in mind in the first place for jaundice after birth rather than putting the children under the light as we usually do. So I just want to say to you, if lipopodium does not work, think about using chelidonium because you might have an unrecognized chelidonium in your hands.
You did a little rendition of Who's Mr. Lipopodium. Can you do that for chelidonium, Mr. Who's...
Who is Mr. or Mrs. Chelidonium?
Mrs.
You know,
Chelidonium.
It might well be Mrs. Chelidonium, and when I say this, is an interesting thing is that the central idea of chelidonium is to dominate everyone through giving advice. What do I mean to that? Well, here, this is Mrs. or Mr. Advisor. You know, chelidonium, therefore, by the way, in general, we can say has more power than lipopodium because chelidonium will dominate not just his family, which, of course, that's lipopodium does. Lipopodium mainly dominates his family, where he's such a great guy when he works out. At his job, he's just Mr. Personality and very sympathetic, but at home, he's a terror, of course. But chelidonium, by the way, is very strong and very powerful at work and at home. You know, because what do? They always try to give advice to others, you know, and they want to be taken very seriously for it. You know, they say to you, hey, this is very good for you. Let me tell you what you should do. I want to protect you. I want you to stop you from doing stupid things. Of course, I've done those. But, you know, a chelidonium means it. You know, and if you don't follow their advice, they will either become indifferent to you, and they should say to you, I won't waste my time with you, or they become mad. And sometimes, actually, they even feel that they have failed in their mission if you don't follow their advice, even to the point of feeling guilty because they did not do enough to convince you, they think. And therefore, we actually find chelidonium under guilty, you know, as we call it, anxiety of conscience, you know, as if guilty of a crime. It's a black type remedy. It's a very guilty remedy, by the way. So they didn't maybe do enough. Maybe they neglected their duty. They also, by the way, are not easy to their children. Just like I said, they dominate everybody. So also at home. And we can see this clearly, that they have the desire to beat up their children when they don't listen to their advice. So they don't hesitate. Certainly here we must make a difference, so they know us with Lycopodium, because Lycopodium can certainly do that too. But, you know, they come overly concerned over to you. You know, let me take care of you, they say. All you have to do is listen to me, and you can't go wrong. But, you know, as Jung always said, and I have been reading a lot of Jung lately, he said, we must know the whole story in order to know the motivation behind his behavior. And the whole story is that Chelidonium does it for selfish reasons. You know, because they need others, because they feel insecure. So if they can dominate others by giving advice, they get more self-confidence, obviously. It gives them more assurance about themselves. It gives them almost the need for them to live. This is really the reason they live, to give advice. Unfortunately, of course, they're often very strong in their advice. You know, they're not giving it in a loving and caring way like a little phosphorus. They're very factual. If you don't follow it, like I said, you just say, I'm not wasting my time with you. As you see, though, this factual attitude, you must have to remember that, too, that it can carry over when a Chelidonium person comes over in your office, though. Because if a Chelidonium person demands lab tests to prove what they have wrong, and if you know, after a little while, if they get better, they hardly will say that they are better, and again, they will ask, give me a test to prove that I am better. Now, this is very important for you to remember this, because if a patient says to you, well, I'm no better, the first thing a homeopath always thinks is, oh, my God, I probably have the wrong remedy. Do not change too quickly with a Chelidonium, because he will say so. And the reason, again, too, is because he wants to keep control over his particularly treatment. He wants to be able to say to you, do this, do that. This is what you need to do next. In other words, as you see, he can still dominate you as a doctor, and he still tells you what to do next. So he still is the advisor. So the good thing is, though, you always will see him coming back. Maybe that's not good, but if you like him anyway. So he keeps on going back because he is another hypochondriac. He has fear for his health, especially fear of pneumonia, by the way. And he often has that strong fixed idea that he has ruined his health. You know, he will say, oh, my God, you know, I used to smoke, and you know what, it's too late for me, Dr. Luke, now. You know, I have committed the unpardonable sin. That is a delusion, by the way, belonging to Chelidonium. A very interesting character, as you see, and you should just remember now that it is basically an advisor. He loves to give advice.
Thank you, Luke. What about the liver symptoms? If you have a case where it's indicated for some type of liver problem, how would you know to give Chelidonium?
Well, Chelidonium, first of all, we have the great keynote, right? Pain in the right hypochondria extending to the scapula. Everybody knows that particularly keynote. And whenever we see that keynote, we definitely, when there is liver and gallbladder symptoms, we should think of Chelidonium. If it's on the left side, the same thing with liver and gallbladder. It's actually Ranunculus bulbosa, so a very different thing. Certainly, as I said before, just like Lycopodium indicated in chronic liver diseases, liver cancer, spreading of meds to the liver, you know, the cancer spreading to the liver, coming from somewhere else like breast cancer or prostate cancer. So we certainly should think about that and think, use Chelidonium very much along with Lycopodium in such circumstances.
Luke, you know, I know that Lycopodium and Chelidonium are oftentimes confused with each other. I know they share a lot of similar symptoms. Can you give us a quick differential to help people on the call to distinguish when to give Lycopodium and when to give Chelidonium?
Yeah, we kind of mentioned some already, but just like a quick recoup here. Lycopodium, it all aggravates between 4 and 8 p.m. Chelidonium aggravates at 4 a.m. That's a big difference, and that should get your attention for sure. As we have mentioned already, Lycopodium dominates the weaker personalities, the weaker person and his family, where Chelidonium have the tendency to dominate everyone. Lycopodium definitely symptoms ameliorate after midnight, only black type remedy, where Chelidonium ameliorates after eating at noon, all the symptoms. like a podium has shoulder pains that is improving by lying on the right side, where a Chelidonium has shoulder pain improving by lying on the left side. So those are a couple of things, and as you see, the mental emotional picture will be a great guide for you to make a differential diagnosis.
Luke, I know that the Lycopodium has a strong desire for sweets, and in the repertory, Chelidonium is listed under desires cheese very strongly. Have you seen that in any of your cases?
Yeah.
The desire for cheese and Chelidonium?
No doubt about it. And by the way, Lycopodium, besides the strong cravings for sweet, which we all know, of course, black type, they also have a very strong cravings for olives. So that's one thing that is different now with the Chelidonium also.
Yeah.
And you're right, Chelidonium is more for cheese.
Great. Well, thank you. I know there was one other remedy you mentioned at the beginning, which was magnesium muriatica.
Yeah, maybe we should open it to questions.
What's that?
Maybe we should open it to questions, right?
Can I open it up to the questions? Okay.
Questions.
All right, I'll do that. Well, just very quickly, though, give us just 2 minutes. Tell us about magnesium muriatica. Can you do that?
Yeah, I can. They're like a two-minute recoup here. We know that magnesium muriaticum is, belongs to, as we see, magnesium, which is, if you know the periodic table, you know that character right away. And it's a very great method, the periodic table, to get to know remedies like magnesium muriaticum, by the way. Because what do we see? We see that magnesium element, which is, of course, what we call the infantile dependency, very dependent remedies, very, on other people, that is the group number two, all those group number two remedies. And on the other hand, we have the muriaticum group, which is group 17, which is actually betrayal of trust. So just to give you an idea what it stands for, it stands actually a person who will be disappointed in his trust of people on whom he depends a lot. And the people that he depends a lot, obviously, are the family in the first place, husband, spouse, close friends, and unfortunately, sometimes you, the physician. If that happens, you, of course, have somebody who will phone you on a regular basis, even at midnight. So that really is a kind of a very small keynote, unfortunately, of this wonderful remedy. I must say, certainly, to give a quick differential diagnosis with magnesium carbonicum, who is the orphan of the Materia Medica, which we all know because that's the poor guy who has been left alone from a young age on. Magnesium muriaticum, on the other hand, is more the situation of a teenager around 12, 13, and the parents are going to divorce right now, and therefore they have no stability at home, they have no relationship, and now they are afraid to lose it. And therefore we see very many characteristics belonging to magnesium muriaticum. In effect, one of them is hysterical behavior. They become hysterical, by the way, black type remedy. Certainly not like magnesium carbonicum, who really needs to keep all his wits to survive every day. But the magnesium muriaticum becomes hysterical because he wants to keep that particular relationship. He needs that friendship. So they'll do anything, even betraying their own feelings, even suppressing their own feelings, in order actually to keep that friendship, in order to keep maybe a relationship, in order to keep his business, but certainly also a teenager like this, who is in the midst of a divorce, a classical thing where we would see that they suffer tremendously and where they will play the role of a peacemaker between the parents so to make sure that they would stay together, and therefore even suppressing their own, desires. And of course, as we know, this is not just for children, this is also for adults. We have similar situations where people go out of their way to do anything for their friends, and then they expect the same thing, but often, as we know, this is not happening, and the magnesium muriaticum will therefore pretty much get to fixed ideas that they lost all the confidence of their friends, and they come from this psoriatic phase, always ready for helping other people, very busy, very hardworking. They go quickly sometimes to a syphilitic phase where they become now a passive aggressor, actually, in a syphilitic phase where they withdraw, they don't want to talk to anybody, and they become even indolent. Here from such a busy individual, they even become lazy, and that's the unfortunate thing because now they have these delusions that nobody loves them anymore, and they are lost in the forest, and they also have the illusion that they are friendless at this point. So that's, in short, the magnesium muriaticum is a great remedy, by the way, and one should always think that when that muir doesn't work, think magnesium muriaticum and see if it does not fit.
Wow. Well, Luke, thank you for consenting to answer that last question of mine, because that was really a wonderful answer. Okay, I'm going to open it up to the general audience now, but before I do that, let me just mention again that Dr. Luke DeShepherd is going to be teaching a weekend seminar at the Victoria University in Toronto, Canada. The title of that seminar is Finding the Similimum Through Delusions and Dreams. And if you want more information on that, it's on May 15th and 16th, so it's coming up very soon. And there are some spots available still. So if you want more information about that, please give us a call at 888-722-5423. That's 888-722-5423. And I can tell you that it's going to be quite an amazing seminar. Okay, so I'm going to open it up to the general group, and you can go ahead and ask your questions. Can people hear us?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, somebody have a question they'd like to ask Dr. Luke?
Can I ask some questions about lycopodium? Can they be, like, after giving the remedy, can they become a more balanced people? Like, the superficial relationship can become not that superficial after treating them with lycopodium?
Well, certainly, whenever we give a remedy, a polycrest like lycopodium, certainly that's what we have in mind. We won't tell the lycopodium person, and that would be a mistake to do so, by the way, telling him that we're going to make him a very balanced person, because, you know, he already thinks he is balanced, so don't tell him. He thinks he is already superior to you. He certainly acts like it. But certainly, it would actually do that. In other words, what really happens is that any remedy, any polycrest has a positive and a negative side. Whenever we give, part of our therapy with homeopathic remedies is to actually balance the person without any doubt. And there's no doubt that everybody, therefore, needs homeopathic treatment who isn't a little out of balance once in a while or maybe most of the time. So certainly we can expect that from the lycopodium person to be a little bit more committed, to be a little bit more serious, to be actually a little bit more harsh, a little less harsh towards his children, towards his wife, less critical, because, you know, they're very intellectual types. Certainly they make great lawyers, and they lawyer at home, too. In other words, when they get into discussion with their wife, the poor wife always loses. There is no better lawyer than a lycopodium. So certainly that's what we want. You know, with whatever remedy, for whatever reason it is, there is always a positive and a negative side of the coin. As we know, there's two sides to the coin, but certainly by giving the remedy, we always will accentuate the psoriatic side, the supportive side, rather than the psychotic or even worse, the syphilitic side of each remedy that we have. And by the way, no matter who we are, we all have that. It's just a question of minimizing the negative side of what actually Jung called, by the way, the shadow side of us, you know, where we actually store all the negative things and certainly what we want to hide towards other people and not want to see us. And lycopodium is a master at it. So, yeah, please go ahead, and I would get the bucket ready for lycopodium, for all those, the mass of lycopodiums we have, no doubt.
Thank you.
I gave this lycopodium to my brother.
Hey, maybe somebody else could ask a question.
I have a question.
I do, too.
Go ahead.
Going back to the small remedies, I understand what you're saying in terms of, you know, using the polycrest because that probably covers the whole thing. I was under the impression that small remedies are often used because they're not fully proven. In other words, because they're not fully proven that they might cover the whole case. I thought that was why some of them were used.
Right, so, okay, what you're saying is I'm under the impression they're used because, well, it's probably a little bit different that they're not fully proven. First of all, yeah, small remedies, what we say, are not exactly, they're called small because we don't have an extensive picture in our materia medica of the remedy. Most of the time, because, by the way, they are insufficiently proven. A reason to more, I would say, to not just use it, because you really run the risk of using and choosing that particularly small remedy just to cover a part of your picture of the patient. And, you know, this brings me to that question because, you know, I see even whenever I go on seminars that we present these remedies, these new remedies, be it an earthworm or be it whatever it is, you know, because we always say, well, we don't have enough remedies. I just want to say one thing. You know, this is big argument for the people who use these particularly small remedies because they say, well, we don't have the remedy yet. It hasn't been proven yet that fits this case, but this small remedy fits at least some of this particular case. Let me say to you, when I teach the von Bernhausen method, which is a two-day seminar, it's amazing how much you can get out of the von Bernhausen method, and he only had 140 remedies, 140. And I think if he would come back, and even Hahnemann, obviously would have even less remedies at some point, he would come back and probably resolve more cases than all of us. So, again, I'm not saying you never need to use a small remedy, but certainly 99%, I would say, don't think that way. And I must say, because it's so often taught, it is really gives that impression. It's so drilled in that, no, we should think first small remedies. No, we should. That goes against the definition to start with.
Luke, I agree with you 100%. I think one of the things, too, that should be added that's important is that Hahnemann didn't choose the remedies that he originally proved arbitrarily. They were chosen because they were constituents of the human body, or they were herbs that were part of, you know, thousands of years of herbal folklore, or they were, you know, medicines or strong poisons. And that's why they're polycusp remedies. It's not, you know, it's because they really have a stronger affinity in general to the human function, human species.
Yeah,
do you agree with that?
Yeah, but go ahead. And by the way, I have often seen, you know, cases get presented and clearly are staphylococcus or a big polycrest, and people look for this small remedy and can't see a polycrest anymore. You know, that's kind of a disadvantage of what's going on a little bit at this point, which is, you know, too bad.
Yeah, yeah. Do you agree with my estimate that
yeah,
my reasoning that there's
no doubt about it? Yeah, of course he did. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Even Costico, when he made it, you know, himself now, but still, this is just a great polycrest without any doubt.
Sure. Okay, let me open it up again to the group.
Tina, how are you?
Good. Go ahead, ask your question.
Yes. Well, you touched on lachesis for a second, and I know how you were saying it's for hyperthyroidism, but were you referring to it as a liver remedy also?
Oh, definitely. Now, lachesis, by the way, is the greatest complementary remedy of lycopodium. In other words, very often, I give you an example, very often if lycopodium does well, and by the way, with that patient case that I mentioned there about the thrombosis of the portal system, he needed both remedies. I started with lachesis, and he actually then showed later in his evolution lycopodium. Definitely, these are both great liver remedies, although, so to speak, lachesis is a left-sided remedy. It is indicated in very many great cases of liver cirrhosis. You should definitely keep that in mind. It's the greatest complement of lycopodium. And amazing, sometimes what you see is that, you know, we know all the sequence of remedies like sulfur, calicarb, lycopodium, sulfur. Well, often what I have seen, and just even recently in a case, is that sulfur, calicarb, and I was looking for signs of lycopodium, and guess what came up? Lachesis. So in other words, it is amazing. Keep that in mind. It's one of those wonderful little tricks that you have to keep in mind. Not only do I look for lycopodium after calicarb now in a sequence of remedies like this, but also I'm going to keep lachesis in mind. And to my amazement, this shows up quite often. And that shows you how close these particular remedies are, by the way. There are certainly great antipsychotic remedies and antisyphilitic, both of them. But certainly, it's the greatest complement of lycopodium is lachesis.
Thanks, Luke. Hold on.
I want your email.
Luke, can you give everybody your email address?
Okay. Hello.
Luke, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Oh, do you mind? Somebody asked for your email address. Can you give that out?
My email address? Okay, it's drluke, drluc, at cybermesa, cybermesa.com.
I'll repeat that again just so everybody can hear it. It's drluc, drluc, at cyber, C-Y-B as in boy, E-R, M as in Mary, E-S-A, cybermesa.com. So drluc at cybermesa.com. Okay, another question?
Well, are you still teaching in New Jersey?
I am still teaching in New Jersey. In fact, this next year we have still two more weekends, you know, with separate weekends. The next one is about advanced miasmatic states, and which is in May, the second weekend of May. And then we have the advanced the silver remedies of periodic table. But in year three, from September on, I will actually teach every month a weekend where I give two or three live cases every day, plus then an advanced topic of homeopathy. So anybody who wants any of that schedule and topics, you can just email me, and I'll give it to you.
Great. Why don't we have one more question? And then we'll end the call. So let me open it up again.
Dr. Luke, can you tell us some liver symptoms for Mac Muir?
Yeah, magnesium uricum, by the way, does have, of course, quite a bit of liver symptoms, basically, as every other remedy. And certainly, what that is, is that they also have now, again, just like like the podium, right-sided lipid problems, you know, with a lot of swelling, hard to live, lay down on the right side without any doubt, so they can't do this neither. They also have to lie on the left side. There is, of course, also what we have, a sharp growing pain in the right hypochondrium that also goes to the back this time, where with like a podium it goes across of the abdomen. Here it goes to the back. I would say for sure, you know, if you have a chronic fatigue patient, I have often seen this, if you have a chronic fatigue patient with liver problems, then magnesium valuaticum should be your first remedy to think. And, of course, because you have the muriaticum picture in there, think about natmur, magmur. Now, magnesium muriaticum also has the same kind of constipation with large hard stools, like we always say, like sheep dung balls, drying, crumbling as soon as they are evacuated. So those are classical symptoms of the magnesium muriaticum for this, for liver problems. Certainly, as I said, certainly indicated in marked enlargement of the liver when you have water retention, and in cirrhosis of the liver, just like lycopodium, particularly with symptoms of jaundice, okay, gray stools. So all those are peculiar symptoms of magnesium muriaticum. As you see, not for nothing did I choose those three remedies, because certainly these three remedies in advanced liver pathology, liver cirrhosis, liver cancer, chronic hepatitis, those three remedies stand on the top of each other, and you have constantly must have them in mind as to see which one will come up.
Well, Luke, thank you. That was an incredibly amazing interview in terms of just the sheer amount of information that you presented and the very wonderful practical tips on how to use this information in practice. I want to personally thank you again. I know you're so busy and you're just you're so generous with your time to come and do these calls. I want to open it up to the general group and let everybody thank you personally. Hold on 1 second.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kim,
I want to talk to you.
Okay.
Bye. Hasta la vista.
Okay, we all love you. Okay, hang in there.
Bye, Luke. I'm going to email you. Your favorite Jersey girl.
All right.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, that's Luke.
My greetings to your little son.
Okay, thank you.
He must be big already.
Yeah,
15 now.
Okay, bye.
Hello. Kim? Kim? Can I speak to Kim? Hello? Is he there?
Are you still on the line? Hello, Kim? Kim? Is anyone still on the line? Hello? 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 Hello. 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 Hello? Goodbye.